Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
We have the lovely Richard Smout.
Good afternoon, Richard.
Good afternoon. Lovely to see you again.
And how are you today?
Yeah, very well. Yeah, no, it's a bit nippy today, but other than that, we're just fine.
Just a bit.
So you're from the Isle of Wight Heritage Service.
That's right, yeah.
And I know we last time you were here, we talked about what the Heritage Service does, but you've got a particular topic for us today.
Yeah, so I've brought along a document which relates to the Blue School Charity, which started off in Lugley Street and then moved to Crocker Street in Newport. And the document I brought is from 1893. It's one of the school reports that they had, not for individual pupils, but more like an Ofsted report.
On the right, screen. Okay, yes.
They didn't have Ofsted then, though, did they?
No, they didn't do Ofsted in those days, so they were free of that particular delight. So they have a diocesan inspector, which we still have for religious instruction, and the person says that the girls answered in a reverent and careful manner and acquitted themselves well. Their repetition, too, was well said, and their singing was good.
That's good.
So that's praise indeed.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And the purpose of this school was to help poorer girls in the town and to train them to go into service.
Right.
And that sounds wonderful, and it was wonderful, but the challenge was that they were really trying to prevent these women from falling into bad ways, shall we say, by training them up for domestic service. And some of the early rules for this society are quite scary and coming through. So I've brought some of them along as well, just as copies, just to give you a flavour. So the children go to the school between the ages of 8 and 11.
So what sort of years are these?
So this is 1761 starts. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice early example of teaching girls.
Yep.
They're to be taught to spell, to read and to say the church catechism, morning and evening prayer, grace before and after the meal. And they're to give proof of their proficiency. So they actually have an exam. And that exam takes place before the great and the good, the ladies of the town who are sponsoring the children.
It is a charity, but there's the individual child or children sponsored by a family or a lady of the town.
Yes, so they tend to be quite often by women, but not exclusively by women. They were sponsored. So, for instance, in 1766, we have got Mrs. Cook and Mrs. King jointly presenting Hannah Alford, who is the daughter of Thomas and Elizabeth Alford, and she's aged 10 years, and they're presenting her into the school. And once she's had that training, they hope that she'll go off and be apprenticed, as many of these children were. Normally, the women were apprenticed into what was termed housewifery, which really means they're going to be a domestic servant.
Yes.
But it was a posh way of saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything went well. So Hannah Deacon in 1766 was discharged from the school for stealing wine and being drunk.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Was she still 10?
I imagine that she would probably be closer to 11 by then, right. but who knows?
Yeah.
Yes. It says stealing wine and being drunk by a committee of ladies. I assume that they were the ones who discharged her rather than the ones that she was drunk next to.
Yes, I think
the wording isn't entirely clear.
Yeah. No.
So these were the female children of poorer families who had hopefully someone would sponsor to be set up for what was, by the standards of the day, quite a good career.
Yes, I mean it gave them a start in life. And it was an opportunity for the poorest children to learn a skill. I mean, basically, the idea behind these charity schools is to stop children from ending up in the workhouse.
Yes.
And then everybody would have to pay for that on the rates.
Yes.
So if you give these children a certain number of skills, then the idea is that they won't form on hard times, they'll be able to find a husband, and it will all be cheaper for the taxpayer in the long term.
Well, that makes absolute sense. And of course, there were the sort of, as you say, the nefarious ways that women or young women in those days could get into bad habits, couldn't they?
Yes, and the school magnificently had its own problem in the 19th century. So this was a building, as I say, in Lugley Street at that time. Mm-hmm. It was in Lugley Street until 1877. And they discovered that next door a pub was set up, a pub called the Dog and Pheasant.
Right.
And the clientele for the Dog and Pheasant were quite loud and obviously fond of drink and very male.
Yep.
And so things got rowdier and rowdier. And so they end up, the good ladies running this charity school, of having to build the wall up between the pub garden and the school garden by several feet to stop catcalls and people peering over the walls to see the young ladies concerned. So it was a magnificent example. The pub came second, but it was a magnificent example of how things can go catastrophically wrong if you're not careful.
So neither of those buildings presumably are still there.
Well, I think they will be there, but they're quite hard to, they're not identical. So I think the that premise in Lugley Street is probably what is now, I think, is RMA. Mm-hmm. I think it's got Ireland Stoves below.
I know the one you mean.
That side. It's been quite widely refaced. And then in 1877, it moves to Crocker Street. And that building still has a Blue Jenny on the in the niche above the main door to the house.
Oh, right.
So that's a replica. So the original was taken to Carisbrook Castle Museum and was recently conserved. But that is where the school ended up. I think it was closed about 1907.
Oh, relatively recently then.
Yeah, and it's still there. This statue is still in place above the niche, and the building became the Newport District Nursing Home.
Right.
Sometimes called the War Memorial Nursing Home, because it was the borough's sort of memorial gift to do something good out of the Great War.
Oh.
Did the school, being as it was a particular school, did it get sort of assumed into the sort of more general national education system?
Yes, so once you get into the 1870s, then there's school provision for everybody, and after a certain while that provision becomes free, so these charity schools aren't really required anymore, because both boys and girls will be educated as a matter of course.
Yes.
So they lost their real purpose by the late 19th century, and they sort of they carried on by their reputations that they built up, but fundamentally it was a lot of work to do to run a school like that when it could be done anyway through the local school boards and ultimately the council were doing that.
I suppose before the 1800s and 1700s, the young ladies didn't get taught at all. They were used to help on the farm or on the land or do the washing or whatever.
Yes, so there's very little education for women at that period, but it's actually brilliant that you mentioned that, Maggie, because there is a case from the grammar school, so Newport Grammar School at the halfway along Lugley Street, next to St James's Street, in the Commonwealth period, so in the 1650s. So at that time, this is a boys' school that is established. And we learn in the late 1650s that the teacher there, the master there, who was German, was in trouble because his accent was said to be incomprehensible and the kids couldn't learn anything from him. However, he had been appointed 8 years before. And so one wonders why that issue hadn't cropped up before. It appears that what happened quite late in his tenure was he tried to make the school more sustainable, and he agreed to take in girls and take them on a boarding basis. So it became a co-educational establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's what the parents who'd sent their boys there were expecting.
Right.
So I suspect that it was at that point that the German accent,
suddenly
which was the excuse, suddenly became important.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's really, really interesting case.
That's quite an early example of someone trying to do a courageous educational school.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's an astonishing example. Mm. But it's a period of great experimentation because Charles has lost his head, and we've got the protectorate in with Cromwell.
Oh, right.
And so there's a lot of new ideas bobbing around the place.
Mm.
And this may be a reflection of it. So it's a very interesting example.
It's fascinating stuff.
But do we know why, going back to your original topic, why it was called the Blue School?
Yes, because they had a set of clothes that they were to wear. So every child was to be given a gown of blue serge, a petticoat, two shifts, two caps and two bands, two coloured and two white aprons, a pair of gloves, a pair of leather stays, two pairs of stockings, two pairs of shoes and a pair of pattens. And the shoes were to be allowed to be twice mended. I'm not entirely sure what happened when they needed to be thrice mended. And there were separate outfits for Sunday as well. So it's the blue serge that leads to it being called the blue coat.
But for a poor family, I mean, then they're not paying for it. That's quite a lot of clothing for young girl, isn't it, in those days?
Yes, and it tallies with the sort of clothing allowances that were made when children were apprenticed. As well.
Ah, right, yes.
So there is an equivalence in there. But again, the cost of providing that clothing was considerably less than the cost of maintaining a child on the rates in the poorhouse.
Yes.
And so it was a sort of an investment to allow an ultimate economy that's going on there.
It's interesting that they started a charity to help the greater good, as it were, and not cost everybody a lot of money by people falling by the wayside. Isn't that an interesting way of looking at it?
Yes, I mean, there's a sort of there's a morality issue there, and trying to ensure that people don't fall into hard times. So it isn't entirely altruistic, but the women who found it definitely felt that they were improving the lots of young girls, and they were saving souls. The only problem with that is that if people went off the rails, the punishments would be extremely harsh.
I think they would, yes.
So talking during the church services on a Sunday, on the Monday morning, they might be liable to be whipped if they had done that, which makes you wonder what the sermon said on Sunday for them to feel that was remotely appropriate.
So is there any idea of how many children there actually were in the school at any given time?
Not off the top of my head, but I think we're talking about something like a dozen or something. It's not a huge establishment,
school, Nevertheless, for the years it was running, it turned out quite a lot of young ladies to go into service, husbandry or whatever,
And we've got excellent records that will give you the names of those children, certainly in that early period. And they're individuals who might otherwise be completely anonymous. So that's quite exciting.
Do we know whether they went into service on the island, or were they encouraged to go overseas to the mainland?
It's a mix. So Portsmouth they quite often went to. There are a few references to them going there. I'm just trying to think of an example I've got here in the 1760s. So one goes to Mrs. Ari Coleman. Well, with a name like Ari, I'm sure that's Ireland. Mm-hmm. And to Mrs. Roberts, she was Ireland. But further down, there's somebody going to Marlend near Southampton. Mm-hmm. And another one going to a Mrs. Legg at Portsmouth. So it's probably slight majority to the Isle of Wight, but not exclusively.
Young ladies who went into service, they eventually did find a husband. Of course, after that point they weren't allowed to work anymore, were they?
I think it's quite a varied picture.
Depending on the employers.
I think it will depend on employers. But certainly, I mean, you're talking about early 20th century, there was an expectation that once you married, you ceased to work in some occupations.
Persisted for quite some time.
Yes. And then later on, it was when you had a child, you ceased to work. But early on, I mean, my mother-in-law was, I think, the first person to work for a bank, the particular bank that she worked for, when she got married. and to continue in that work. And that was very unusual, and that would have been in the 1950s, I suppose. So,
Fascinating stuff. It is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
I wish we had more time.
Yes, but
we don't. You'll have to come again.
Oh, thank you. That was always a pleasure. Thanks.
No, it's fascinating to find out. I vaguely recall seeing a picture of the little model or the figurine, if you like, that goes in the niche above one of those buildings. Fascinating, though, that's a piece of island history that actually has national ramifications, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That there was a charity set up to help young ladies. Excellent. Thank you very much, Richard, for that.
My pleasure.
Absolutely fascinating. So we'll see you. We won't see you next month because December's a bit of a weird month, isn't it?
It is indeed.
But you're due back in January with another topic of your choosing, and we'll publish this podcast probably tomorrow morning.
Great, thank you.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing @vectisradio.fm.